It's time now for our weekly Suburban Farm Yarn with actor, activist and green thumb storyteller Monica Main. Welcome to the program, Monica.
G'day. How you going, Chris?
I'm going good. How are you going in the heat?
Yeah, I'm not melting so much, trying not to anyway. And I know everyone's gardens are melting. Well, not so much melting now, it's just cooking. But I would discourage people from removing dead leaves from any plants. The dead leaves can still protect the plant, so don't remove those brown cooked leaves from the very dry, hot oven temperature air, people.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. So I've got a couple of dead plants in my front garden, and I think they're dead because I haven't looked after them properly, but it would be wrong for me to remove them now and try to put new stuff in because it's just too hot, yeah?
Yeah, that's cray-cray.
Yeah.
That's just
I
crazy.
Thought so, yeah.
Particularly since you've proven to not just yourself but your neighbourhood that you're not really good at probably doing the basic thing, which is just watering.
I don't know. They got water. They're all right for a bit.
What plants are they?
I don't know. They're green ones.
Well, they're probably brown now, aren't
they? Yeah, they are. They're brown and dead.
Okay. Well, it's hot, peoples, and I thought I'd talk about flies.
Yes.
So we're in Boonaroo, which is the hottest time of the year. Hot easterlies, hello, go outside right now. And no rain, hello, go outside right now. Ergo, your front garden, dead plants. How many fly species do you reckon there are worldwide?
Worldwide? Oh,
yeah.
10 million?
Oh, damn you. No, a million.
A million, okay.
Yeah, when in doubt, just go the
whole
hog.
Yeah.
Only about 150,000 have been described, though. There's about 30,000 species of flies in Australia, and only just under 6,500 have been described. So if you're interested in being an entomologist, there's huge scope out there in flyland, peoples. Mm. Now, a fly is distinguished by the fact they only have one pair of functioning wings, so wings that fly. So think about, say, you know, those little beetles you see, black beetles that open up their little backs.
Yeah.
They've got a pair, or cockroaches. When they fly, they've got a pair of wings as opposed to they've got two pairs, I should say, a pair of pairs.
Yeah.
So flies have just got one pair. Now, there are four main flies in Australia. We've got the bush fly. They're out in the bush. Go figure. We've got house flies. We've got blow flies. We've got march flies. And guess what? Mosquitoes are a sort of fly.
Oh, right.
A variety of fly. Yeah. And march flies and mosquitoes do have something in common. When you go out bush, have you ever been bitten by a march fly, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, you know about it, don't you?
Yeah. You feel it.
March flies are like mosquitoes. The female wants that protein. They are blood suckers. So
right.
They're coming to sting you, to eat your blood, just like mozzies. And that's why they give you that bloody nasty sting. And interestingly enough, the male mosquito, they're very benign. They just eat nectar. They
right.
Don't go for blood. So when you've been stung by a march fly,
it's a female,
fly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
The march flies are also similar to mosquitoes in that when they do sting you, they kind of just hover for a bit because they're kind of a bit drunk on your blood, and then you can slap them, can't you?
Yeah, and they're probably just thinking, am I full?
Yeah.
Can I just tuck in for a bit more?
Yeah.
They're bastards. I think march flies are worse than mosquitoes, though. Like, it's a really painful. It's really like being that proboscis is sharp.
It's a proper bite. Whereas a mosquito's like a little nip.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're allergic to the old mozzie saliva, you know, some people get a bite, and then you know it just turns into this hideous welt.
Right.
So people have various degrees of allergy. Some people go, oh, I never get bitten by a mozzie. Well, you know, lucky you.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Now, do flies carry diseases?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, they're vectors like mozzies. I mean, mosquitoes and fleas, they a vector is basically just an insect that can carry, you know, a disease or bacteria from one species to another. But mosquitoes and fleas carry it in their blood. whereas blowflies, say, or houseflies are just, you know, filthy animals. I mean, blowflies are interesting. They're called blowflies because they need something fly-blown. Well, you know, the term fly-blown is why blowflies are called blowflies. It's not because they blow around. They come from fly-blown things, as in they basically need the protein, the rich protein in poo and, you know, compost, garbage, anything decaying, they want to lay their eggs in there. And then when the eggs hatch, those maggots can eat on that disgustingness. So interestingly enough, the maggots, though, are sterile. So the casing of the maggot, the egg casing, can be, you know, covered in crap and filth that they've been laid in, but the maggots inside are actually sterile. So you might have heard of maggots being used in cases where there's antibiotic resistance. So, you know, some people have, there's, you know, wounds develop, necrotic, flesh-eating, you know, horrible wounds. And maggots, when they're bred in a sterile situation, so, you know, they're not out in disgusting filthiness, but in a laboratory, those maggots that hatch from those nicely clean egg casings, they're placed in the wound, and they can eat that necrotic flesh that's not, that's like antibiotic resistant.
Like in Gladiator.
Or in some, you know, horror zombie apocalypse. If they can get the clean maggots and just, you know, get them in there. So, so it's interesting. Seems like a very simple remedy, but it does actually work. And it's not sort of out there, it's used in contemporary medicine where, as I say, antibiotic resistance, which is, you know, on the rise, so it can be incredibly effective. So the blowfly life cycle is really interesting because they can, you know, go from egg to adult in just a couple of weeks, and they only live for about a month.
Right.
The female can lay like 100 to 250 eggs, and the maggots can hatch between 6 and 48 hours. And then the maggots hatch and they're eating whatever, you know, the crap, the poo, the rubbish, the dodgy compost that you haven't put a lid on properly. And, you know, that's the term fly blown. And then they turn into their larvae, and in that larvae is when they metamorphose into flies. That's, and that larvae stays, they're in that little kind of carapace. And that can take 4 to 10 days. So, and then once they hatch out, they're a fully grown fly. So if you see a little fly, that's not a baby fly. That's just it.
Yeah.
You don't get a fly that grows into a bigger fly. So a little fly is a little fly. A little house fly does not grow into a big march fly or a blow fly. A blow fly hatches out of its larvae state the size it's going to be.
Right. It'll
live for those few more weeks as that fully grown. It does its growing in its various stages from the egg to the larvae. The larvae grows up and up in its pupae state, and then it hatches into that fully fledged blowfly.
The last couple of last year or so, has there been more flies around because of the El Nino effect, or is that a bit of a misnomer?
No, if there's moisture, they need moisture. That, you know, they can't just go around and lay their eggs in something that's dry dirt.
Yeah.
That's why they need, you know, wet dog poo, cow poo, you know, sheep poo, as I say, bad compost, you know, open rubbish bins full of just, you know, rotting whatever.
Yeah.
They need a damp rotting medium for their eggs to hatch into, and then the maggots can feed off that disgustingness. So at the moment, it's really, really dry. And I actually think there's less blowflies because we've had these kind of massive oven temperature days where everything just gets cooked to a crisp, including, like, my compost bins have got the lid on and they're really cooking away in there. But if the lids weren't on there, it would all just dry out.
Yeah.
So,
and catch fire,
with
maybe.
Strong easterlies. This is what my mum used to say. She said, I love the easterly. It gets the blowflies or the bush flies or any flies, and it blows them way out into the ocean. and then they die.
Right.
Because there's nothing out there for a fly to...
To live on, yeah.
Eat,
yeah.
You know. Yeah, so they just kind of get cooked. Because of that, you know, month-long lifespan, and like the adult only lives a few weeks, so, you know, say 2 to 4 weeks, if they can't optimise that time and, you know, find somewhere to lay their eggs and keep reproducing, yeah. So I think at the moment, because of this terrible heat wave we're having, there feels like there's a reduction. I mean, I've seen a few, but, you know, they can, if they can't find a kind of a cool spot to just kind of chillax in, like, you know, I don't think there'd be any in your front garden by the sounds of things, Bruce.
No, nothing can live out there.
It's a fly desert.
Yeah. Now, speaking of heat, what's the best way for people to look after plants in this heat? Now, watering about now is just a waste of time because it's just going to evaporate into nothing. So what's the best time to get out there with a hose or put your retic on? And what else can you do to help your plants survive
the
heat?
Well, don't water the leaves. If you notice your plants, like if you've got some plants, you think, oh, shit, that got missed in the watering, definitely water them from the base. Sometimes this heat, the actual temperature is so dry and hot. We've got very low humidity, you know, maybe 10 to 15%. And if it's 43 degrees, that is literally like sticking your plant in what are those air fryers?
It's an air fryer.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about hydration of the roots.
Yeah.
Some, you know, get a cheap umbrella, get some shade cloth, because sometimes just shading the plants can help get them through these. I've got a few beach umbrellas stuck around my backyard in some really hot spots where the upper tree canopy is not enough to shade.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, watering in the morning is good because, you know, the plants are going to be photosynthesising all day, so they're sucking up that water as they photosynthesise through their root system. And if you water the leaves in the middle of the day, that moisture on the leaves can amplify, like a magnifying glass, the heat and actually cook your leaves
right.
of your plants. So that's not great.
No, that's bad.
And the water can heat up and just burn them as well. So
yeah.
Hot water, hot boiling water. So that's why always from the base. Sometimes people get a bit overzealous and tend to overwater their indoor plants. Indoor plants, you know, sometimes it's better to err on the side of dry. You definitely don't want to drown your roots.
No.
A lot of plants, I mean, unless, you know, you've got some jungle plant from the, you know, from the forest jungle floor that just really wants to be in constant moisture. But even things like Monstera, philodendrons, you know, that you can err on the drier side of the potting mix and then water them.
Yeah.
And, of course, succulents and cactus, you know, every, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks, because they just store water.
Yeah.
And definitely cactuses and succulents in this kind of weather, if you overwater them, they carry so much water, they can actually cook. So this on a cellular level, because they've got carry so much water, if they get too hot and then they're in full sun, they can actually, you know, cook and then get rot. So,
right.
And if you water the things at the end of the day, I mean, look, if you get home and your plants are like, you know, like wilting, certainly give them a drink. But, yeah, optimum time is in the morning because, as I say, they're going to be sucking at that moisture during the day,
yeah.
Kind of keep hydrating,
yeah.
As they say.
Now, what about with particularly indoor plants? Most people have their air cons blasting at this sort of heat. Does that affect at all? Does it create more moisture for the plants? Yeah, and a bit of humidity?
If you've got evaporative, that pushes air through water and then blows that cooler air that's been cooled with the water through your house. So that tends to contain more water. Whereas air conditioning, refrigerated air conditioning, it actually dehydrates the air. So it dries out your skin and it dries your plants out.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned this before. It's kind of handy having a vessel of water, a bowl of water near your plants, because that water will evaporate with your air conditioning on and just keep your plants. And also, if you keep your plants together, they like company. They look after each other.
Right.
Plants transpire. They let off moisture as that water's been sucked up through their root system and out the pores of their leaves. Water gets released. And if you've got a bowl of water near them, the bowl of water will evaporate and keep moisture around them. Or you can give them a light spray as well. Don't, you know, constantly saturate your plants. Some plants do like being hydrated with, you know, like a little sprayer. But certainly, yes, if you've got your aircon on on the whole time, you might see some little kind of browning on the edge of your leaves, and that's because they are drying out. So, yeah, a bowl of water under your plants will give them a helping hand.
Well, there you go. Monica Main coming through with the good stuff.
Good on you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
No worries. Stay cool, everyone.
That was Monica Main, resident expert in the world of plants and flies, as it turns out.